Well, hello and welcome to the ASI cast. I'm Richard Marks, ASI's Research Director, and today I'm joined by Michael Vinson, who's Chief Research Officer at ComScore. So welcome to the ASI cast, Michael.
Thank you, Richard. Good to be here.
Now, in our last episode, episode 131, if you're counting, Jane Clark of CIM gave us a great overview of the current state of play with US measurement, and there's clearly a lot going on. Meanwhile, at our ASI event last month, we focus a lot on the ASI initiative around cross-media measurement, and specifically the initiatives to deliver on the Advertisers North Star with Project Origin in the UK and in the US, with the Association of National Advertisers leading the charge. Now, Michael, ComScore is one of the companies that's been selected by the ANA to conduct a trial in the US for a cross-platform solution to meet those WFA ambitions. What does that trial involve, and how will you be testing the VID model? What data sources will you be using? How does it all fit together?
Yeah, that's a great question, Richard. So the overall intent of the project is to demonstrate that using sort of privacy-preserving methodologies, especially on the digital side, combining them with television, we're able to get to a valid, defensible, auditable, final cross-media measurement result. And in order to do that, ComScore in the US is sort of uniquely positioned to cover the various bases. On the one hand, on the digital side, we have a robust desktop and mobile panel, set of panels really, together with a wide census network that allows us to calibrate and understand the differences between our online panels and the internet at large. On the other hand, we also have, I'd say, unrivaled television assets, again, in the US, with set-top box data encompassing over 35 million television households, which is like a third of them, where we have second-by-second event-level viewing tuning information, in most cases, furthermore, combined with an idea of the demographics within the household, the roster of who's present, their age and gender, and other demographic attributes. We're able to combine all that together into a cross-media measurement vision. And then as part of that vision, one instantiation of it, if you will, is the work we're doing with the ANA in this pilot. And we're not by no means the only measurement company working with the ANA. Our focus has been and will continue to be on really the bringing together the two sides. So you mentioned the VID, or virtual person identifier, or VID models, which are part of the original design of the WFA proposal. These are probabilistically assigned identities that are privacy preserving, which is essentially the reaction to overly intrusive measurement and tracking and targeting online over the past several decades that's led to an understanding of the importance of privacy, and I do think it's important. So we have, on the one hand, this probabilistically assigned VID model, digital. It's well understood how that works within digital. We're sort of going beyond the, if you will, traditional VID approach published in the original papers, white papers from Google. We're going beyond that. We can talk about that if you're interested. And then that piece is then merged with the television piece. And this will be both linear television and connected television. The this merging, it's important to recognize, I think, that on the television side, we're not doing a VID model with probabilistic assignment on the television side. On the contrary, we're doing what we do in ComScore television reporting today, which is deterministically assigned demographics. And again, we can talk more about that if you're interested, that are then represented in a space of identity, which is fused with the VID probabilistically assigned digital identifiers into a common cross-platform measurement.
It's interesting that one of the things that I'm fascinated by is that although obviously there's a lot of connectivity between the ANA and ISBAR, that the situations are quite different because of the availability of set-top box data, which obviously ComScore has had, ever since you acquired Rentrack, I think, back in the day, you've had access to a fairly unparalleled sweep of that sort of data, whereas in the UK, the emphasis has been very much on gaining access to barb currency data and right. to broadcaster VOD data. Now, as I understand it, in the States, there isn't really an equivalent of broadcaster VOD data because effectively the platforms have that rather than the broadcasters themselves.
That's correct. The MVPDs, the cable and satellite operators, they have assets from all the broadcasters that are then made available to their subscribers, either on demand or live or near live.
Is it in the UK, the barb data, if it is fed into the origin system, will have demographics assigned to it? In your case, using the RPD, I gather from the presentation that Jukka, your colleague, did at our event, that you'll be using a process called personification. Is that something? It's always tricky in a podcast to do that. You know, it's not like you can use charts or something. But
exactly.
Is that something you're able to explain in layman's terms to a non-statistician like me?
I can try. This has been an ongoing challenge to explain a method that at its core really is reasonably complex. I think Jukka probably did I know he did an excellent job describing it, and he did have the ability to show charts, which is helpful. Let's take a step back and talk about the data inputs for that personification process, and then I'll try to motivate why I think we can do it without the need for a directly observed panel. So first of all, we have the 35 million-ish households under direct measurement, second-by-second tuning data, passively observed, et cetera. The majority of those households are furthermore linked to Experian Consumer View demographics data via a third-party match that's done by some but not all of our operator partners that do it with their subscriber files, so they understand who their subscribers are. Experian understands their view of who everyone in the US is and households and so on. That merge happens outside of ComScore. What we get back is anonymous identifiers, which are the same anonymous identifiers we see in the tuning data, the set-top box data, merged with merged with the Experian Consumer View demographics data, so such that we have then, again, more than half of the 35 million households with a view of the demographics of who's within the households. And so we have the households where it's five people, mom and dad and three kids. You have the households where it's a retired couple and everything in between and all a manner of, and that will become an important point that we have, because we have such scale, every combination, not necessarily always literally every, but essentially all the combinations that can happen of age, sex buckets, times, number of people present are there somewhere in that data. So we have good coverage across all the possible, or most of the possible, almost all the possible combinations of age, sex, presence in a household. So that's one piece. Now, separately from that, we also have, of course, the tuning data. So we know second by second behavior, et cetera. And the idea here is that the set-top box tuning information that we get is, and let's consider it to be household level data. We could imagine looking at different set-top boxes within a household and try to infer which is in the kids' room or the living room or whatever, but we don't do that. We could, but we've found that we don't need to. So we aggregate however many set-top boxes are reporting data within the household, that's aggregated to the household. Take that household level data set, and here's the point now, that households, the homes, houses, they don't watch television, the people within them do. And so the choices of the people watching are somehow encoded within this household level aggregated data viewing behavior. And just to sort of motivate that assertion a little bit, you can imagine, again, I have lots of different types of households, lots of different combinations. I can imagine taking different households with children and without children that are otherwise the same. So I have, here's a household with one male, 25 to 34 with kids. And over here is a household, male, 25 to 34 and no kids, and so on. And every combination of those. And so I could look at households that have the kids, households that don't have the kids, but are otherwise demographically and maybe in beyond just the age, sex, number of people present, I could look at income and race, ethnicity, and education level, and this and that, and match them together and look at the differences in their viewing. And in aggregate, with a large enough aggregation, by focusing on just the fact, here's the ones with, here are the ones without households, I can attribute the differences to the presence of the children and use that to infer what the children are viewing. Now, an immediate objection to that is, well, the fact that you have children can also affect the viewing patterns of the adults, right? It's not just what the kids are watching. And that is also something that is we can observe and attempt to take account of through various, you know, sort of statistical methods. This is where I can run into trouble. It becomes difficult to explain this. It's essentially a hierarchical Bayesian inference, which is a mumbo jumbo. I mean, like, one person was asserting to me I should just say it's machine learning and be done with it. But I don't like doing that. I think that's a little bit dishonest. So there's this idea that encoded within the household, observed household viewing is the details of person level choices that are leading to that viewing. And forging that connection between sort of the probability distribution of person level viewing on the one hand and the probability distribution of household level viewing on the other, making that connection is essentially the role of this methodology. Maybe, and sometimes it's rather than trying to explain how we do it, maybe it's better just to say the proof is in the pudding, and this is where it would be helpful to have some charts. We still have for some months now, we do have some panel data on person level panel data in the US, 50 plus thousand households, where we have essentially every member of the household ages 6 and above equipped with a portable meter that they carry around. And then through detecting audio signals, we're able to attribute viewing to the individuals within the household. So that's a panel asset, directly observed, if you will. It has the problems that panels have. It's small, it's biased, it's there are measurement problems, et cetera. But it is, you know, arguably a directly observed person level data set that records who is watching what when. We can then compare that to what we get from the set-top box methodology, Bayesian, this and that, and see how they compare, at least in the cases of programming that has sufficiently large audience that it's we can capture it reliably on a small panel. And they agree very well. And that's really the bottom line. And when we launched into this effort starting about 2 years ago, I didn't know if it would work well, poorly, somewhere in between. And but we had to develop it because we were losing access to the panel asset that I mentioned. And so we had to be able to do this without it. And now that we've done it and it works better than I could have expected. And I can see that by comparing to the panel asset. I can compare to other assets. We also do surveys, which are not necessarily the best way to measure television, but it tells you something. Other assets, when available, we can bring in to compare. We've been showing the results of this methodology to various broadcasters who have a good sense of their own audiences. And so far, it seems to be passing the sniff test. They don't see anything that looks wildly inaccurate or unexpected in the data. In fact, in some ways, it's kind of boring that way. You get kids watching kids' shows and older people watching shows aimed at older people and so forth.
I get the principle of people's viewing records being able to triangulate on the available demographics in the household. I'm never quite sure, and it's probably beyond this the duration of this podcast, but how you handle co-viewing, because having established the person most likely to watch that show, whether it's a husband forcing someone to watch their favorite show with them or vice versa, I'd argue that's probably where it's most challenged, isn't it?
That's a very perceptive observation, and I like it that you use the word triangulation. That's a term that I also use, and I think that really comes down to measurement in general nowadays, that it's always using assets that are available to try to get to that external reality out there that we're trying to understand. In the case of co-viewing, you're right. People together behave differently from people alone. That's that's an assertion, but I can see it certainly in this panel data that I mentioned, as well as survey and other assets that we have. It's definitely true. It's a little better than the way you described it, where I can just take the most probable person. I can take the probabilities of the individual persons involved, do sort of an independence assumption, and come up with, from that alone, a co-viewing estimate that will generally be low because of this sort of clumpiness of human behavior. But it's a starting point. And then we treat this, again, sort of without going too much in this little mumbo jumbo, but we treat that as a Bayesian prior, which is what we get from the person level distribution, demo distribution that we extract as described before from the household level signal. Take that, that's our starting point, if you will, our prior. And we then layer onto that additional information wherever we might have it. In this particular case, what we have today is a survey that is served to households that watch, are known to have watched certain shows. And it's a very simple survey. It's an online survey that they get the next day. We try not to make it too creepy. And we ask, you know, if you were watching so-and-so, who was watching with you? And we get that information back. And we're not using that directly as the co-viewing estimate. We take that information and use it as additional information and sort of a Bayesian updating methodology to improve on the prior that we get with the independence assumption to get something better that takes into account that clumpiness that you were referring to.
You mentioned, obviously being able to use the portable meter panel as a way of verifying what you've been doing. When you finished the test itself with the vids and you've got effectively a cross-platform video database, how will you judge the outcome of that test? I mean, what does success look like? I know, for example, in the UK, they've announced their intent to build a panel, a cross-media panel with Kantar as a source of truth to actually verify and train the model. What's your source of truth that you can go to the ANA and say, this has worked, look, it matches? Because in a way, it's a bit of a catch-22, because this is exactly being built because of the absence of any data in the first place.
That's right. If there were a source of truth, that's what we'd be using. That's right. And there isn't. And so it is more of this triangulation. And that really is the answer. And we are working with others, the ANA, MRC, and others in the industry on this validation framework, a way to answer exactly the question that you're bringing up, which is, in my view, the right question to ask. And we're bringing together all this stuff. I talk about personification, but there's a whole other step of then taking this VID, the model for digital, and fusing it with the now personified television data that we can also talk about. There's further processes involved. And all of it at the end, you know, to restate your question, ends up with this cross-media measurement that could be right, could be wrong, or I mean, it's never either or. It's how right is it? And how do we measure that correctness? What's our source for that? So again, there is no single source of truth, so that's what we'd be using. What we do have is views into pieces of it. So for now, for example, on the digital side, as of 2021 into 2022, we continue to have access to third-party cookies on the largest browser in the world, which is Chrome. That will go away in the future. That's actually the sort of the assumption that led to the WFA cross-media proposal in the first place. But now we have cookies and we have a way of measuring today. And so for the digital piece, we can compare with what we have on digital. Television piece, compare with what we have on television. Sometime in the next year, we will no longer have access to the panel asset, the personified television panel asset. So we won't have that, but other people will have others, and they can take our data and evaluate it on their own. So it'll be sort of pieces of measurement. Now, at the end of the day, with cross-platform, the whole promise of cross-platform is to be able to properly deduplicate across the different platforms. And that's a difficult one. We have a cross-platform panel of our own. It's not very large, but it tells you something. And again, it's back to your triangulation metaphor that we look at the different pieces with as much fidelity as we can with whatever access to to whatever assets we can come up with, including clients doing it on their side and telling us, you know, yes or no, good or bad, or a percentage of accuracy or whatever, and so forth.
It's going to be interesting because there are potentially, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars at stake.
Yes.
In terms of what the eventual overlap is between broadcast television and online, because obviously when people are trying to build reach, that the degree of overlap or non-overlap will be determining in how much money they do or don't put into those two media for SOLAS coverage.
Absolutely.
And it, we come back to our catch 22, that if there was a source around that allowed you to check that, then you wouldn't be needing to do it in the first place. So it's an interesting catch 22. But I guess one of the aspects will be that there are, as you mentioned, other tests being considered, mm-hmm. being conducted, and the degree to which they correlate with each other would be interesting. I mean, presumably if the test is successful, in terms of the business model, I think Natalie Bordes made it clear at our event that laws in the US prevent the ANA going down the joint industry currency route, which is what, so at the moment in the UK, ISBAR currently going around the industry seeking funding from all relevant parties to fund one single currency, which isn't legally possible in the UK. So I'm assuming you would, yeah, if with ANA endorsement, and if it works out, you would set up a service yourself that other that people would be able to subscribe to, but also potentially the ANA could say two or three different services have been fit for purpose, and in the spirit of competition, here are all three, pick which one you like the best.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely, I think I welcome the competition, the comparisons. I think all that is healthy for the industry. I agree the US is different anyway from the UK in the JIC sense that you mentioned. But we're open to different paths here. It is possible, and Jane Clark, formerly head of SIM, outgoing head of SIM, has been urging the industry to come up with a converged television panel. And I'll be talking to John Watts, who will be the incoming head of SIM, about that in the coming months. As of, you know, VideoAmp and other players, and Nielsen, of course, in the space are also involved in this. Whether it's each of us going it alone, some kind of cooperation that's maybe not led by the ANA, but by other groups in the industry, I can't say. And except that we are, you know, as Comscore, we have our own data assets that are you know, represent our competitive advantage. But that's not to say that, you know, a rising tide raises all boats, that we won't cooperate with some of our competitors for the purpose of something that's expensive and hard to do on our own. Who can say?
It strikes me that for the success of this in the US has got two elements to it. One is, you know, the research solutions that we've been talking about on this podcast. The other is the degree to which the interpretation of US law can be challenged, because it is holding US measurement back, the inability of the industry to, you know, cooperate and collaborate to get the best possible measurement system. It is based on an interpretation of US law. It's not a definitive interpretation of US law. So you would have thought some industry lobbying coinciding with this period of change would make things more successful. But I from an American perspective, you may not legally be able to comment on that. I'm in the UK, so I can say what
you
I
can
like.
Say whatever you want.
But that, I guess that does kind of dovetail into a final question, which is, we're aware that as well as the ANA tests that are going on, that NBC is also holding a tender for TV measurement services to, specifically focused on the current television currency. How connected are those? And is there a danger that they could become confused. I mean, could one solution fit both objectives? Could the ANA solution tick the NBC box as well, or are they entirely separate things that ComScore? I'm sure you've bid for both, yep. But are they destined to be entirely separate initiatives, or are they kind of joined at the hip just by timing?
It's somewhat in between the two, I'd say, that the NBC initiative, which is, I think it's an excellent step forward for the industry. Traditional television measurement has been by a small panel and isn't up to the task anymore. I think that's well understood. And so NBC is doing what I think makes a lot of sense, is calling for improvement in measurements. Ultimately, the same mission as other industry groups as well, and including this ANA initiative. And the difference really is that the ANA is taking the perspective from the advertiser point of view, and the sort of the media buyers, and the NBC is, of course, the media seller, so they're taking the seller point of view. And that those very different perspectives, and moreover, in the case of NBCU, they're also a large content creator on the television side. They put a lot of money into creating that content, and they deserve, or if they don't, they won't continue to create it, to get paid for that content. And therefore, I think it's important that the measurement, which serves the needs of the advertisers who are ultimately paying for all this, does also facilitate the understanding of the differences between different channels. You know, their television is, and versus, let's say, search, different can be used differently in different parts of the sales funnel, different aspects of the media strategy. And, one can argue with the equivalency or lack of it between an ad placed in premium video content versus an ad placed in user-generated cat videos on YouTube or whatever. And, our role as a measurement provider is to surface all of that, so that then the buyers and sellers can negotiate between them to come at an agreement on the transaction ultimately.
I mean, one possible outcome could be a different currency for the buy side and the sell side, depending on their. I've often speculated whether the needs of the content industry are fully converged with the needs of the advertising industry when it comes to measurement. And certainly companies like Parrot Analytics are driving attempting to drive a huge wedge into that disconnect and say that, content needs to be measured in a completely different way to advertising. But I guess that might be a topic for a whole different podcast.
Yeah, although I would want to distinguish between the currency aspect, where a currency, in order to be the basis of a transaction, has to be agreed upon by both sides, buy and sell. But then there are other purposes of measurement other than currency, planning, programming, evaluation, et cetera, where I absolutely 100% agree with you that there are different needs and both deserve to be met.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for that update. Obviously, you're at a critical stage in the process because you haven't got any data to share yet. But
We're getting there. We're very close.
It'd be great to circle back with you in a few months' time and see how things are progressing. But in the meantime, thanks for making the time to speak to us today, Michael.
Thank you, Richard. Very much appreciate it. Cheers.
Thank you.